He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell, Taylor Williams with you as always. Looking forward to the Memorial. Obviously, the biggest tournament since the restart. It's Jack's tournament. It's at Jack's place. Tiger's there. A lot on the line. 76 world ranking points on the line. This is the strongest field ever in a regular season event. This is a stronger field than the last eight Masters. This field is loaded with talent. I've really been looking forward to this preview show. One, because Tiger's back, and two, because there are just so many good golfers right now in the world. So many of them on form, and this tournament, I think, is going to be pretty special, Taylor.
Yeah, you know, we talk about strength of field all the time, and you mentioned the 78 or 76 world ranking points available. You know, strength of field is 8-10 this week.
8-10. For a regular season event.
Yeah. This is a non-major, non-World Golf World Golf Championship. And you mentioned earlier it has more than the Masters. One of the reasons is because the Masters has a limited field. This is a full field, so it counts in all the better. That's why you'll see, like, the PGA Championship normally has the highest because they have the most players in, or the British Open is very similar because they allow the most people.
But you would think, so the first week of the FedEx Cup, you've got all 125 guys in. That's the 125 best from that season. This is a stronger field than any playoff event ever.
Is that not insane to think about?
Wild. Yeah. First regular PGA Tour event with a strength of field greater than 800. It's been done in the Players' Championship and majors, things of that nature. Never been done in a regular playoff or just a regular season event. We're in for a treat.
Yes, this is going to be good. And I just hope that we can get somewhat close to as good a finish as we had last week, because, I mean, the Morikawa JT fireworks coming down the stretch was probably the best finish we've had all year. And so if we could get something that's, you know, remotely close to that, I think we'll have a good weekend. But when you have so many good players out there, you never know. You might, and hopefully we're rooting for Tiger, obviously, but some, you know, DeChambeau, who's the favorite or is at least the highest on DraftKings, or maybe one of these other great players. I mean, Thomas in the field, McIlroy, DJ, you know, one of these guys could go out and win by five or six and, you know, leave everyone in the dust. So we kind of don't know what to expect, but I'm like you, Colby. I'm very excited for it. I think it's going to be great. And we got a little bit of a tease last week because we already seen the course.
Yes, exactly. Did you see the text that Jack sent Justin Thomas on Sunday?
I don't think so.
So Jack Nicklaus was in his plane, and his plane was getting ready to take off. Like, they were just fixing to take off. So the last shot that Jack Nicklaus saw before the plane took off and powered down the phone and everything was the bomb that JT made on the first hole of the playoff.
Oh, no. He didn't text him congratulations.
He did not see Morikawa putt. I mean, Morikawa's not a great putter. He's got 25 feet downhill, a little double breaker. So Jack actually said that he and Barbara both texted Justin, Barbara Nicklaus's wife, both texted JT. Nicklaus said, he said to him, "Wow, what a fantastic putt. Unbelievable, fantastic super putt. Can't believe that you made that putt. Now you've got the chance to win two in a row next week."
Oh!
And then he turned his phone off, and then he turned his phone off, and the plane took off. And so they got wherever they were going, and he figured out, oh, hell, he didn't win the playoff. Morikawa made it on top of him. So he had to send JT another text to say, oops, a little premature. Jack laughed and said that JT was all good about it. Obviously, ain't nobody getting mad at Jack. So.
No, it's going to be hard to
rip.
What are you going to text back? You asshole. You know, what are you going to, you know, you're
but
not going to say
that.
Can you
imagine losing in the playoff like that, and then you pick your phone up, and the first thing you see is your congratulations text from Jack Nicklaus?
Could that be any more salt in the wound than that? I mean, that's pretty close. I mean,
that's as good as it gets.
Besides Morikawa sending like a nude pic to Thomas or something like that with a trophy by him. That's about
which would be pretty epic.
Yeah, that would as well. But yeah, I mean, I didn't see that. I got the story pulled up in front of me now. That's crazy. And
Barbara texted him too.
Oh no. And that's, gosh dang it. Then, you know, obviously they had to have both felt somewhat bad, or, you know, then they're like, oh, you know, we shouldn't have said that, and we couldn't, you know, they can't take it back or whatever, but nevertheless, that is a really funny. I didn't see that until you just mentioned it. Well, Thomas doesn't have a chance to win two in a row, but Morikawa does,
yeah. And Morikawa already a runner-up and a win since the tour resumed play. He played four of the five events, obviously first missed cut of his career at the Travelers. I'm not rostering Morikawa anywhere this week. it's a rule that I usually have. I usually don't run a guy out the week after he wins. Morikawa's playing great. There's no fans. You know, it's easy to just get back in your bubble and get out the next week and play. Unless it is one of the absolute elites of the elites, like when DJ was having his run in 17 before he got hurt, some of the runs Tiger's been on in his career, some of the runs Rory's been on in his career, it's hard for me to run a guy out the week after he wins because the emotional energy that is drained to win on the PGA Tour is remarkable. So I will not be rostering Morikawa this week, despite the fact that I love everything about the way he's playing golf.
No, he played phenomenally last week, has more wins, like we mentioned on the last show, has more wins than missed cuts does, and we brought up Tiger's record on our last show. How many straight events was it? He went from 98 to 2005 without missing.
97, actually.
97, that's right, at the end of 97. So I don't think Morikawa will quite get to that mark of, you know, more wins than missed cuts, but at the same time, he's just phenomenal player, young gun again. And we also mentioned this on the last show. This is the first time that we're seeing back-to-back courses since 57.
So a couple weeks in a row someplace in Illinois.
Yeah, so it's a little different than we're used to. You know, normally you win and then you travel to the next course, you know, so you have a flight or a drive, whatever it may be.
Yeah, like Hovland's just been driving cross-country. Yeah, you hear him talking about that on the broadcast?
Oh, yeah, and you see the little mileage chart that he has. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's crazy.
And he drove off apparently from one of his hotels and he left his bag of laundry and they like tracked him down and gave him his laundry back. So come on, Vic, get all your stuff before you leave.
Yeah, get your stuff in order, right? Victor? Exactly. And one thing that's interesting about that, when we talk about, man, you drive that much, I don't see how that can be good for your back. I mean, when you're on the road that much, you know? I mean, obviously, he's been playing phenomenally. Has he finished outside the top 25 since he's returned and hasn't missed
a cut? He has not finished outside the top 25,
He went T23, T21, T11, T12, and then solo third last week, which was at Muirfield, which it is this week again. So, besides the chipping woes we saw on the last nine on Sunday, besides that, there's really nothing going against Hovland right now. He's on such a roll. And
Does it bother you he's played six in a row? This will be six in a row. Because I've seen some conversation mostly on social media this week about six in a row being kind of a cutoff point for whatever reason, a tough act to follow. But like you said, he's not traveling.
Yeah, he's not. You make a good point because, let's say, for example, you know, Muirfield's in Ohio. So if they were going to like Florida or something, then it would be a little different because that would be the sixth day that he's traveled. Now that he's since he's played five and this is six, but he's not really having to go anywhere. He's just staying in the same place. He can probably take probably take yesterday off and could take today off for light practice if he wanted to get out there and play a few holes on Wednesday, make sure the green speeds, how much they've changed, and, you know, check out the rough as well and see all that stuff. But like you mentioned, he's not traveling. So that is why I wouldn't discredit Hovland this week. I don't know. You might have the odds in front of you, Colby, on what his odds to win are.
Yes, I do. Let's see. Victor Hovland. Why did I scroll down? Victor Hovland is 22-1. Exact same odds as Colin Morikawa and John Rahm.
Wow. See, that's a little too high of a price for me. A little too high. I think Hovland will play well. Let me check his DraftKings value.
So here's the guy he's priced lower than. He's got better odds to win the tournament than Hideki Matsuyama, Brooks Koepka, Xander Schauffele, Webb Simpson, and Tiger Woods.
Oh, boy. Just listen to those names.
Right.
Listen to those names. And I mean, like we just mentioned, Hovland hadn't finished outside the top 25, played all these weeks. You might be onto something. Maybe the sixth week, maybe the fatigue starts kicking in. But it's definitely not someone I would lay any coin on just because, like you mentioned, those guys listed below him, even cheaper guys on DraftKings, Matsuyama, Rahm, Schauffele.
What's the old DraftKings, like 95?
95, exactly. Yeah, and you look right below that, Hideki's 94, Rahm's 93, which, spoiler alert, Rahm will be in my lineup. I cannot believe that he is only 9,300 on DraftKings.
That's really cheap.
That's the cheapest he's been in a long time for someone.
He's top five player in the world.
Yeah, and before the returning, he didn't finish outside the top 17 for an entire year. So,
let's see, John Rahm is currently the number two ranked player in the world, and you're getting him as the 10th most expensive player on DraftKings.
Yeah, and he was, what, 25-1 on there or 22-1?
22-1. Yeah, same as Victor Hovland.
Yeah, and, you know, we can go back and we can look at Rahm's course history here. And I mean,
he finished 27th last week. He missed his cut in his only start at the actual Memorial in 17.
So, you know, it's not like he's a horses for courses guy, but for someone who, and even going back, he missed the cut at the first event back at Colonial, but even since then, hasn't got inside the top 25, but hasn't finished worse than 37th either. So he's
just been kind of average.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Plodding along.
Yeah, he's just kind of getting along. And for someone like Rahm, who's so talented and so good, you know, when's it going to click? And we saw it last week with some of the higher results that this is a iron strikers golf course. And Rahm, he's going to be able to bomb that driver down there. He's not going to be scared to hit it. So if he's able to get himself into the fairways to hit an approach shot, I think he's going to have a great chance. And for the value, 22-1 and 9,300 on DraftKings, it's really hard to pass on number two player in the world at that price.
Yeah, that's absolutely great value. I want to remind everybody, there is a fun event happening next Friday at Bushwood Golf and Country Club down in Chickasha. It's a four-man scramble, starts at 6 o'clock, and you're going to be playing later in the tournament with lighted golf balls. So should be a lot of fun. My wife and I are going to go down. We're going to play with my brother-in-law and my sister. So we're going to team up, the four of us, and see what we can do. My wife enjoys scrambles because when she tops it off the tee box, she gets to hop in the cart and go for about a 270-yard ride and hop out and hit her next one.
That is the way to do it. Have you ever played a night golf event, Colby?
I have not, no.
It is a lot of fun. It really is. It's really fun because then you can, a lot of people are just drinking, you know, having a good time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a lot of fun because the flagsticks will be lit up and then you'll have a colored ball. And it's, the hardest thing about it is you can't read greens at all because it's dark,
right.
You know, so it has that little extra element and kind of coolness to it. Night golf is one of the funnest things you'll do. And if you get a chance, get a chance to sign up for this tournament. You'll have a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's next Friday night. Call Bushwood, 405-224-1250. I believe it's the first 30 teams that get in. I think that's where they're capping it. So, you know, we were telling you to get in the Valley, and they all filled up. So don't wait. Call 405-224-1250. Get on down to Bushwood next Friday for that four-man team scramble. A little night golf action. Taylor. Tiger Woods this morning. Were you around? Were you able to watch his media availability?
I didn't watch the media conference. No. What all do you have to say?
It was mostly boring. It was mostly exactly what you would expect, cookie cutter type stuff. You know, he was asked, "What have you been watching? Have you talked to the guys about fans not being there?" He talked a lot about the fact that there won't be fans there.
What was he saying about it? Was he saying that he'll feel better? Will it be unique to him? What did he say?
He just kept kind of alluding to the fact of how strange it will be for him. You know, he was even asked by one of the reporters. One of the reporters said, you know, when was the last time that you played an event with no fans? Would this have been in college maybe? And Tiger was like, well, no, I still had people out there in college. So
yeah.
It's, and he kind of joked and laughed about that because, you know, only Tiger was drawing galleries as a collegiate athlete,
right.
As a collegiate golfer. But it was mostly talking about the fans, you know, just how weird it's going to be and how he's going to have to draw his own energy. He talked about the golf course. He talked about how low guys have gone since the restart. He talked about the scores last week, the fact that he knows Muirfield Village. He knows what that golf course is and the teeth it can have. So to see those scores was pretty wild. Now, one thing I did see earlier, and this isn't related to the Tiger Conference, they haven't mowed the rough. They're not going to. Greens are going to get faster. So fairways are going to be at a premium because that's going to be, I don't think they've mowed the rough 4 days, I think is what I saw earlier. So it'll be
six days. It's not only going to get long, it's going to get thick.
Yeah, it's going to get long, thick, and thick.
And that's when it's that thick rough, that's when you're hacking at it. That's the U.S. Open type stuff where you're just trying to get it up by the green.
Right.
And even if you have a wedge, you can't control the spin at all.
And if you miss it way offline, it's not trampled down because the fans.
No, that's a very good point.
That rough, you know, you miss a fairway by 30 yards whenever there's people out there, you might actually draw a better lie than if you missed it by 5 yards.
Which Tiger did for a lot of times during his career, especially
Absolutely.
During the Haney era. You know, he'd hit it off in the trees, and then he would have, it'd be kind of some bare lie to be able to hit a little cut around there up to 15 feet and make birdie, just like everyone else does.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So, I mean, it will be super unique to watch Tiger play a full event with no fans. We had mentioned a couple times before, the only time I remember him not playing without fans was at Congressional at the AT&T when he used to host his tournament. And that was just one round. It was only I think it was Saturday when it happened.
It was Saturday. He was asked about that today in his presser. When was the last time you played a tournament? He said, well, not a tournament, but a round. They had the washout, and he actually ended up winning that tournament. So, I mean, if you want to prognosticate, you can say, hey, the one event that Tiger's played as a professional with no fans on that Saturday ended up winning the tournament. So Tiger has not won this event since 2012, whenever he had the hole out from beyond the 16th green.
When you play with Ricky, you shot 85.
Yes,
four or five.
Ricky was a spectator. He was, I think he actually bought a ticket that day. Ricky did.
He deserved to. Yeah, he was holding Tiger up pace of play.
It was a VIP all access ticket. He was inside the ropes. I think it was kind of a make a wish thing where he got to
make a wish.
I'm sorry, that's terrible. That's terrible. But Jack, so I watched the highlight of Tiger's hole out on 16. That's terrible. And Jack was actually on the broadcast at the time. Called it one of the best shots you'll ever see, considering what could happen if it went wrong. And at that point in the tournament, he was actually one back of the lead when he held that shot and ended up winning in 2012. Since then, he's played it four more times, 65th and 71st way back in the day. 2 years ago in 2018, he finished 23rd. Last year in 2019, he finished 9th at this event at Muirfield Village. So what are your expectations for a Tiger Woods that as of Thursday will not have teed it up in competition in 151 days.
It is a weird phenomenon, to say the least. You mentioned that Tiger had had that rough stretch, and obviously that was back in, back when he was having his back issues. 2013, he actually wasn't hurt, but 2015 when he was just trying to get by, and I think
we had the chipping yips in 15 as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think he made the cut on the number 15, then shot similar to what Ricky did. He shot like an 84, 85 on Saturday.
Yeah, I think
Saturday.
He had the chipping yips at this event in 15.
I believe so.
If I remember right. Yeah.
I think so, and so, you know, we're looking back on that. We might throw that out as an outlier. But other than that, Tiger's had such a great record here. But at the same time, Tiger, you know, we talk about it all the time. Tiger's one of those guys to where he feels like everything in golf is a process. So, you know, I don't see Tiger as one of those guys who can – if I don't know if he has it in his mind that he can just come out unless he's just – feeling in an on form because he hasn't played the competition and hasn't really been up there. Because like you mentioned, he said in the show how low the scores have been and how that shocked him. So is he going to, because he's always mentioned how he, you know, he shoots for a number. So is he going to be trying to shoot for a certain lower number than he normally would? You know, what's his mindset going to be? Because your mindset's different in competition than it is even in the match thing that we saw.
The match was a washout. They were in carts, just having a good old time. That's not competition.
It's not. And last time we saw him was the Riviera thing. We alluded to the back problems.
He was asked about that today.
Yeah. What did he say?
He said he was asked about how he feels now in comparison to how he felt at the Genesis. He admitted that he was very stiff at the Genesis. It was cold, caused a lot of problems in his swing. And he said that he gradually got better. He said he's feeling even better now than he was feeling at the match. So he said it's just been gradual progression. You know, it's warm right now. It's easier for him to get his body loose. So he sounded pretty good about what he says physically. And you're right about Tiger always alluding to it being a process. You know, he needs to come back. He needs to make a cut and then have a top 10 and then win a major. Kind of like when he was making his comeback, won at the Tour Championship, second at the Valspar, won at the Tour Championship, and then won the Masters.
Finished second at PGA to Koepka as well.
Yep.
So he was up there.
Finished top five at the
British Open.
Yep.
Had the lead on the back nine. Yep. So as you see, it is the process. Here.
So then my counterpoint would be this previous fall, he took 9 weeks off and had a minor surgery prior to Zozo, and he took a flight over to Japan. And I mean, the dude, his iron shots were on a rope.
That's a good point.
And he won his 82nd tour event. Yeah. So I'm stuck between Tiger likes to have the process, and the last time we saw him with a layoff, it wasn't this long, but the last time we saw him with a layoff, he came out and ran the field over in Japan. So,
well, you make a good point too, because I think for the Zozo, you know, he didn't take that 9 weeks off to prepare for that tournament. He was preparing for the President's Cup. And now he's gearing his game up for the rest of the major championships going out through the rest of the year.
Granted, field strength was not 8-10 at the Zozo.
Very true. Very true. No, it was not. No, yeah, probably not anywhere close. I actually want to look
up. There was some good. Yeah, you can look it up. But I mean, Jason Day, I know. Hideki Matsuyama. I think Rory was in the field that week. So there was definitely some high-level talent in the field that week. Gary Woodland, I know, played that week because I think he was in Tiger and Hideki's group on Sunday.
Zozo had a 526. So
that's still pretty good.
It's better really
than,
good, yeah.
Better than last week. Last week was a 498,
yeah,
with all those guys. So
yeah,
still pretty strong.
Yeah, very, very strong field, absolutely. And, yeah, you make a good point there because I think that Tiger, because he's won five times here?
Yep.
And so when you win that many times, you start to lose count. So, right. You know, and he's won five times on multiple golf courses. So someone who's had such a great track record here, it's definitely one of those things. I would be more surprised if he missed the cut than if he won.
I would too. I'd be shocked if he missed the cut because for no other reason than that he's Tiger Woods.
Yeah. And even, I might even go as far to say I would be more surprised if he wasn't at least in, maybe not even in contention, but at least minimum top 25, I would say, you know, because I think that unless he just makes the cut and loses motivation or something like that on the weekend, I think he's going to be there with a chance to win. I just don't know if he'll be able to get it done and to have, you know, all the shots down at the end just because of the maybe not even conscious, but subconscious thoughts of the process.
Well, and I think even more so than that, you know, we talked about the elite golf that's been played over the last 5 weeks, how low everybody's been going. I mean, you don't really, right now in the game of golf, you don't get to have a bad nine. You don't get to have a bad day and win a golf tournament. You really don't. I mean, unless you're just elite the other days. I mean, that's like last week, Morikawa, you know, he had the Saturday 72. The other 3 days, he was elite. The other 3 days, he was 19 under. So unless you're going to do something ridiculous for 3 days, you don't get to have a bad day right now and win on the PGA Tour.
No, you don't. And one thing, too, that, you know, we might be looking at, you know, his next win will be to beat Sam Snead. He tied 82. Now, oh, yeah. His next win is going to be at 83. So will he use this as kind of motivation to get 83 at Jack's tournament?
At Jack's place.
Because that would be epic. Yeah. So I don't know how those thoughts are playing in the back of his head and how he'll go from there. And obviously these are just completely unusual circumstances, so it's hard for us to really process how Tiger will come back from this. I think if I was going to bet, I would say he'd finish top 15, but not win, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. Let's take a break. Let's come back on the other side. Let's kind of dive into our picks some. We've kind of broken down Tiger, the tournament. Obviously, we know what the golf course is. We just saw it a week ago for the Workday Charity Open. Colin Morikawa outdueling Justin Thomas down the stretch and in the playoff. So we'll take a break, come back. We've got our ideal DraftKings lineups. I've got my bets this week. I've got 6 golfers I'm running out at $10 a piece, so I'm pretty confident in those. Looking for 5 winners in a row. So we're giving you winners. We're giving you good lineups. That's coming up next. Stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back. We're rolling along here, previewing the Memorial Tournament at Jack's Place, Muirfield Village Golf and Country Club in Dublin, Ohio. It was great to see it last week. Really interested to see the difference in how it played a week ago versus how it plays this week. Some of the guys who have great course history here didn't fare well last week. We'll see if they can bounce back this week at Muirfield Village. I'll be really interested, Taylor, before we get into our picks, some of the course setup stuff. Jack Nicklaus said today that he would be okay with them using a forward tee on 14 and letting it be drivable one or two of the day. So I'll be really curious to see if they do that, and I hope they do. If I had to pick a day that I would want it done, it'd be either Saturday or Sunday. Do it either on moving day or do it on the 68th hole of the golf tournament, where you've got to have some serious stones to go after it.
I agree with you completely. I think that definitely at least one day on the weekend, Saturday or Sunday, it should be there. Then if they want to do it Thursday or Friday, so be it. But I completely agree with you, Colby. I think that hole is, like I said, it's one of my favorite holes. It's one of my favorite holes even when it's not a drivable hole, because you got to position it. And
the green complex is phenomenal.
It really is. And you can even take it up the right side if you want to have a shorter distance in and gets narrower. It's just the multitude of options you have on that hole is what makes it so good, and that's what makes what I think all good golf holes. And we mentioned this last week whenever we were talking about how this tournament would play out, and you know, how many different pin locations will they be able to use, because now they've got the greens rolling faster, so that eliminates a certain number of pin locations. So did they use the tougher pin locations, well, technically close or tougher pin locations last week on slopes where they won't be able to this week? Are they going to use some of the same pin locations?
So one thing they talked about on the broadcast is that they had a lot of pins on slopes that are about 3.5%, and that when they speed the greens up to 13 instead of 11.5, they'll have a lot more pins at about the 2% grade.
That's what you have to do.
Because it has to be fair to the players.
Yeah, because if not, then even if there is no wind, you can't get the ball to stop close to the hole. It's unfair.
If you've got the greens running 13 and you put the pin on a 3.5% slope, I mean, you could really hit a good putt and not get it within 6 to 8 feet of the hole.
Yeah, and I think we've all been there at some point in time when we played a course wherever it may be, and we, you know,
yes, we're. Yes, I'm a member at the Greens. They yeah. are huge, huge fans of unfair pins.
Yeah, and so you can like putt it up and it'll stop an inch from the hole and then it runs back to yep. you 8 feet, you know, and we, no one wants to see that, and that's not how golf should be. So I don't think they'll do that. Obviously, they've always had such a great tournament, so I'm not worried about that. I'm just more fascinated in to kind of see the differences, and like you mentioned, Colby's, what days will they have 14 playing up? Because I think that's going to be play a big part in it, because if yeah, it
don't,
is...
Don't do it Thursday. Don't waste our time.
Yeah, I don't...
It's pointless.
Might as well, because everyone's going low Thursday anyway.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so I think...
Do it when there's pressure. I want there to be pressure on the weekend to pull driver knowing you miss it a yard right like Hovland did on Sunday. You might have just shot yourself out of the tournament.
Yeah, and like you said, Saturday is technically called moving day, so you get someone out there early, then they drive the green off, and they make an eagle, vault up a little higher in the leaderboard, can post a little lower number than they would, get out there in front of the pack a little bit. And I would like to see it on Sunday as well, too. I mean, we're kind of picking our poison here, but I think, you know, if you do it on Sunday, then, you know, it would be interesting to see the guys that do go for it and the guys that don't. I would think that Tiger would probably be one of those guys that would lay back each time, while some of the other big hitters, DeChambeau is probably going to hit an iron up there or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, DeChambeau 308. He probably hit 3 wood. Morikawa obviously drove the green with driver on Sunday. Hovland drove the green with driver on Saturday. So guys would have some options. Gary Woodland hit it in the greenside bunker with a 3 wood. I know on it was either Saturday or Sunday that I was watching. So, but like you said, the variety of ways you can play the hole, and here's how you can tell if it's a great short par four. Are the percentages of guys going for it and laying up about 50-50? And on the weekend last week at the Workday Charity Open, it was almost exactly 50-50, guys going for the green and guys laying up. That's a good golf hole.
Yeah, well, we had mentioned, I believe it was the Travelers, where they had, we talked about the DJ situation with the mode rough.
15 or 16
at the Travelers? Yeah, or they don't have the bank, and so literally, or they didn't mow the bank, so literally everyone's going for it. You know, it's just essentially a long par three at this point.
Because if you don't duck hook it, like Rory did on that hole, then you're not going to hit it in the water.
Exactly.
Because the rough hole.
And so there's no really incentive to lay back. And I couldn't agree with you more. I want the players to be put in position to where they have to make a choice, whether it be go for it, have the stones, hit the driver, hit the long club, or to lay back and rely on your wedge game. I think, just like you mentioned, options are important, and you can't have it to where, like a lot of these reachable par fours are, where a lot of people are just going for it every single time when there's not a whole lot of penalty if there is a miss.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we give out some winners? You want to do a little ideal DraftKings lineup?
Yeah, we'll do ideal DraftKings lineup. Yeah, you've been on a harder streak than I've been, especially on your picks. What is it, 5 in a row now you have, or you're searching for 5?
Four weeks in a row, I've bet the winner. So I've bet Webb, DJ, Bryson, and then Morikawa last week, which I'm on a little bit of a heater. I bet 6 guys a week. But there's a lot of guys who can win golf tournaments. So to nail the winner every week, I've definitely had some good fortune, but been making some good picks as well. You want to start cheap this week?
We'll start cheap.
Let's go cheap to expensive. I'll get us started down at 6,100.
Okay.
I'm going real cheap. Yeah, I'm going real cheap at 6,100, but there is just serious value here in Stuart Cink. That's right. You heard me right. I didn't misspeak. Stuart Cink, 2 for 3 on made cuts since the break, 10 of 12 on made cuts for the season, and he's got pretty good course history here. A couple top 10s in the last decade, a lot of made cuts. He's played here all but 2 years since 2008, and he's only missed the cut one time. So at 6,100 for a guy who finished 17th last week on the same course, give me Stuart Cink. Mega cheap.
Yeah, I like that value there for sure. I was focused more on that T17. I saw it and I was like, Stuart Cink still plays golf? And then he's up there on the leaderboard. Now you go back and look at it.
We recorded our recap yesterday and you mentioned Stuart Cink, and then I saw him on DraftKings last night and I was like, Stuart Cink, why not?
Yeah, 60. I mean, for him to be 6,100 is really cheap. And for someone like you just said, has really good, not really good, but at least decent course history here, and that cheap, it's really hard to beat that. And
you can feel pretty strong that he can make a cut.
Off of a top 20 too, especially. Yeah, exactly. At the same course. So my most cheap guy will be someone who I've run out. My two cheapest guys are two guys I've run out essentially all year.
6,500?
6,300 is my first one. Okay. That's Tyler Duncan. So okay. I've been on that train for a long time. I believe he still has not missed a cut since the return. Hasn't missed a cut. Hasn't finished. Doesn't have any really top finishes, hasn't been up close to the leaderboard, but some guy who I can depend on to get me on the weekend for that cheap, because one of the great things we always mention with these strong fields is you can really diversify your lineup in a lot of different ways. So I went with two pretty cheap guys who I thought would make the cut, and then I went pretty top heavy with guys who I think could win.
So I'm assuming that your other guy is Taylor Gooch at 6,500.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Finished 17th last week. We mentioned how many ever times this is an Iron Strikers golf course. He is the definition of that. He's finally went through that rough 2 to 3 week stretch where he didn't have it on. Yep. Looks like he got it back this last week. I don't expect anything to change this week. And I think he'll like the faster greens as well, yep, too.
Ditto. I'm in for Gooch at 6,500. That's one of mine as well. So I've got Stuart Sink at 61. I've got Taylor Gooch at 65. All I was waiting for to start rostering Gooch again was for him to give me one good showing, because I know that he is a really good player on tour. So I knew that the little lapse that he had where he missed the cut in back-to-back weeks at Harbortown and then at the Travelers, and then he withdrew at Rocket Mortgage. I knew that that was just a blip. So Taylor Gooch at 6,500, I'm all in. My next pick, I'm jumping all the way up to 8,600. So I totally avoided the 7,000s. Yep. But I dumped up $2,100 from my fourth to fifth most expensive guys. I'm going Gary Woodland at 8,600. Really like what he did a week ago. I think he, as evidenced, what was it, last summer at Pebble Beach? Yeah, it was last summer at Pebble Beach. Likes hard golf courses, likes hard conditions. Rough's going to be up this week. Greens are going to be fast. Somewhat, wider fairways, obviously, but somewhat U.S. Open conditions, I think, maybe, with the rough. I like Gary Woodland in that aspect at 8,600. And where was he at last week? I know he had a good weekend.
Finished fifth last week.
Yep. Good weekend last week. Finished fifth. Has made a lot of cuts here. I like Gary Woodland at 8,600.
Yeah, that's a pretty good pick. Yeah, and like I said, there's just so many great players in this field. You can really break it down any way you want. My next cheapest guy will be 8,000. So we're right around the same mark. We both avoided the 7,000s entirely.
Apparently, there's no value there.
And there's a couple guys around that range that I like, but generally, yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head. A lot of those guys in there are question marks. And, if I'm going to take someone who has any type of question mark, I'm going to load up on the top guys who aren't question marks. And then, these guys, the cheaper values like the Stuart Sink you found or Tyler Duncan, Taylor Gooch, these guys who we think are cheaper value who are going to get us to the weekend allows us to build around that.
But so, by the way, if you're picking the guy at 8,000 that I think you're picking, I hate it.
Well, and let's see how many there are. There's only two of them, and I was debating between two people here. The one at 8,000 and the next one at 7,900 was Joaquin Niemann, who I didn't go with, but I'm going with Matt Kuchar.
Okay, you're going with Kuchar. I don't hate that. I would have hated Jason Day.
No, I'm not going Day. Played well last week, but I believe last week was his only top 25 at this course.
So since the restart, cut 46th, cut 7th for Jason Day. I think it was more of a one-off for Day until I see it a little bit more. Also, for a guy who's had concerns with his body, this is 6 weeks in a row for him too.
Yeah,
I missed the cut three times, but still 6 weeks in a row.
Yeah, 2017, he finished 15th. Other than that, hasn't finished better than 27th other than last week at this tournament. So for someone with the injury concerns, whenever I picked him in our one-and-done pool before our podcast even started, he withdrew on me, so I'm going to stay away from him as much as possible. But I really like Kuchar this week. He has really good course history here.
Since 2008, he's got 7 top 10s and only one missed cut.
Yeah.
And he's won here in 2013.
Yeah, and so he finished 39th last week, so not necessarily his best showing, and hasn't that was his best finish since the return. So not necessarily having his best stuff, but for someone with a course record and for 8,000 with all the other top guys that I have along with him, I think that I'm going to be in pretty good shape.
So who you got next?
Next pick will be, I want to make sure I get my value right, 9,200. And this will be not our podcast one and done pick, but will be my our big one and
our
done.
Season long
one pick will be Schauffele. 9,200.
I love Xander this week.
Finished 14th last week. Just super consistent. Has only missed the cut in his very first appearance here, but last year at this tournament, and then last week finished 14th at both of them actually. And for someone finished third down at Charles Schwab, missed that. We all remember that 360 lip out he had down there. And then he had kind of the rough stretch after that at RBC Heritage, probably from being disappointed from the loss. Then after that, finished 20th at Travelers, 14th last week. I'm going to roll with Schauffele, and I wouldn't be surprised. You said he was 25-1 to bet. I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up winning and be a decent bet to lay some coin on.
Yeah, Schauffele's got pretty good odds. I like his chances this week. So my next two picks are coming at 9,000 and 9,100. At 9,000, I'm taking none other than Eldrick Earl Woods. I'm telling you what, when he's healthy, I still truly believe he's one of the best players in the game. Does it bother me a little bit that he hadn't played in 5 months? Yes, but, he's been out playing. His swing looks phenomenal. If he is healthy, I still believe that at a course he's won at 5 times, I don't think there's any reason not to expect Tiger to come out and have a top 10 finish this week and be in contention on the weekend because, again, if his body's right, I think his game is right. So I'm rostering Tiger at 9,000. And then at 9,100, a guy that I'm taking a bit of a flyer on. This is just a hunch that I have this week. Brooks Koepka really gets up for big events. Rarely gets up for these regular season events. If you can't get up for an event that has an 8-10 field strength in which you're playing with Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy the first 2 days, after you've talked trash on Bryson in the last week and a half about the steroid, the little tweet that he sent out, Brooks Koepka played his final 7 holes in 5-under last week at the Workday Charity Open, missed the cut by a shot. I'm thinking maybe he started to figure the course out a little bit. Who knows? Maybe he was just out of contention, started swinging free. I don't know. But I'm taking a flyer on Koepka this week. I think he will very much be in contention on Sunday.
Yeah, that definitely is a flyer because, like you said, he did get hot on Friday but did end up missing the cut by just one, right?
Yeah, he made about a 40-foot snapper on 18 to get inside the cut line, and then the cut moved.
And then it moved out, yeah. Gosh dang it, what a bummer. But his only other, besides the missed cut last week, his only two appearances here were 2017, finished 31st, and 2015, finished 52nd. So, yeah, you are taking a little bit of a flyer for someone who hasn't finished in the top 30 on this course before.
Yeah.
So, but I think you're kind of got a good yin-yang there, because Tiger is, even though I don't have him in my ideal lineup, he is a pretty sure bet, I would assume. Because like we said, I'd be more surprised if he missed the cut than if he won. And then, but Koepka is almost the flip side of that, where he could come out and win by, like we mentioned at the start of our show, he could be one of those guys that wins by 5 or 6, or he could miss the cut or whatever.
Well, and I think these conditions, long rough, fast greens, where does Brooks Koepka win?
Majors.
He wins majors, he wins the U.S. Open. This is going to be major-like course conditions with a major-like field strength. I think he will be extremely motivated to play this week.
You may be right, and we'll definitely see on that. I do like the hedging on both of those for sure. So my last two picks will be, we mentioned him earlier in the show, I can't believe he's this cheap, number two player in the world, John Rahm, 9,300. Hard to not roster that guy, so I'm going to load up on that.
It's not like he's playing elite golf, but he's the number two player in the world, and he's the 10th most expensive on DraftKings. I tried to make it work where I could have Rahm in my lineup. I couldn't do it. I've got zero salary remaining.
That was like me with Tiger. I tried to fit it in there and just didn't make it work. And then my most expensive, I'm going with the man, Rory.
That's my sixth.
Okay, so we're a little similar here. He didn't play last week at this course, missed the cut 2019. But other than that, 2018 finished 8th, 2016 4th, 2014 15th. Back in 2011, 2010, he finished 5th and 10th. So has some good success here, has a couple missed cuts and 157th in there. But those, besides the missed cut last year, those are kind of back earlier in his career. So I am going to roll out Rory, and I just think that, you know, he played a couple courses in a row that didn't suit his game very well. Colonial and Harbortown aren't really up Rory's alley for his type of game.
No,
so
not.
He got out on a course that's like the Travelers and kind of faltered on Sunday even.
Didn't really play that well at the Travelers and finished 11th.
Exactly. And so, kind of like you mentioned with Koepka, I think he's going to be motivated to come out and play. And even more so than Tiger, I would be more surprised if Rory at worst was top 10, top 15, and as opposed to missing the cut, because I don't see that happening.
You know what I just realized?
What's that?
I rostered that entire featured group.
What, Rory Koepka and
Tiger? Rory Koepka and Tiger.
Oh, boy. Well,
that means I get to watch every shot Thursday and Friday for half of my DraftKings roster.
That is pretty intense. But one thing, too, is how good of a group is that?
Oh, dude, it's unreal.
Man.
So what are the other featured groups? I took a screenshot. Let me find it. So we've got that featured group, which is, again, Tiger, Rory, and Koepka. This one, which I think is a major dud of a featured group, is Phil, Justin Rose, and Shane Lowry.
You could have done better. I think you could have done a little better.
8-10 field strength. We're getting Phil, Justin Rose, and Shane Lowry. Okay. Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, and Xander Schauffele. Solid.
Pretty good.
Very solid. And then Bryson DeChambeau, Colin Morikawa, and Patrick Cantlay, I think is a really, really strong grouping.
That is good. Yeah, we found a dud in there, but other than that, I think you have some really good feature groups. It's going to be really fun to watch during that process. And we mentioned the whole Tiger fans thing. I think it's going to be so unique if Tiger makes like a 50-foot putt and you don't hear anything afterwards.
It's going to be even more unique if he wins his 83rd tour event and there's like 8 people clapping.
Exactly. Or yeah, does something real intense, or like he gets in a playoff like this last week with Thomas or Morikawa.
Makes a bomb to win.
Yeah. And does a fist pump and there's just the classic golf clap in the background, right? You know? So it that'll be weird, but I'm, like you mentioned, I'm super excited to see this tournament. And I love that DeChambeau pairing, but I would like to see him at some point do like DeChambeau, DJ, and Woodland, or, you know, just get all the longest hitters out there. You can put Cameron Champ out there if you have to.
Put DeChambeau, DJ, and Koepka in a group.
There it is, right?
Koepka wants to talk that noise on Twitter.
Yeah, there he is. Yes, it's put up or shut up, right?
Yeah, put up or shut up.
Exactly. So, no, it's, I mean, we're talking 8-10 strength of field, and this is
I can't get over how good of a tournament this is. I can't get over it.
It is. It's better than World Golf Championships. It's comparable to majors. I mean, it's just a loaded field, and that's why there's so much diversity. And also, too, we talked about it on Monday. It's one of our favorite courses that we see each year. Muirfield Village has such a great course design. Nicklaus, he's known for his golf game, obviously 18 majors, but he's one of the most underrated course architects out there. So I think that, you know, it'll just be awesome to watch at this course. And is there any of your other betting values that you want to give out
So I'll give you my picks this week. So my six plays that I'm making, I thought I had it pulled up on my computer. It's all right. Took a picture on my phone. Not to worry. My six plays that I'm running out this week: Hideki at 25-1. This is a risky play, but Hideki's a high-risk, high-reward guy. Last week, he led the field in greens in regulation for the week, just couldn't quite get it figured out. Has great course history here, plays well in tough conditions, so I'm taking a flyer on Hideki. I already told you I like Brooks this week. Brooks loves tough conditions. He loves big-time fields. He's playing with Rory and Tiger. I think he's going to be motivated. I'm putting 10 on Koepka. Both those guys are at 25-1. Then we drop down to 28-1. I'm putting 10 on Tiger because if he wins his 83rd tour event and I don't have money on it, I'll be kicking myself, so I'll probably just throw 10 on Tiger from now
every
on.
Every single week?
Every single week.
That he plays?
Because I've got to be able to root for Tiger. It's coming, and I've got to be able to root for Tiger. Also, a guy who can move to number one in the world this week with a win if Rory finishes worse than 15 is Webb Simpson. And Webb is 20.
Are you serious? He can move to number one in the world?
Dude, 76 world ranking points available this week. Webb can move to number one in the world. He's currently number five. He could leapfrog DJ, JT, John Rahm, and Rory with a win this week. He just needs Rory to finish T15 or worse.
Can you imagine
Webb world number one in 2020
with all these good players that are out there?
And he's 28-1. And he's playing great golf. Let me pull up his form here. Webb Simpson, since the restart, missed the cut week one. Who cares? Finished first the next week at Harbortown, eighth 2 weeks ago at Rocket Mortgage. Took last week off to recharge the batteries. I mean. That's some pretty, pretty good value on a guy who could be the number one player in the world.
It would just—I just couldn't believe you said that because I didn't realize that. I mean, could you just Webb being number one over Rory, Thomas, DJ, Rahm, Koepka, DeChambeau, Tiger? Patrick Reed's number eight in the world. I mean, it's just all these players he'd be above is just insane.
And we got Webb saving it with the hands at Impact. No world number one.
Ah, gosh dang, that would just be crazy. And hopefully, I mean, like I said, you've won four in a row now, so it might be your fifth. So one of these picks is going to hit. And if it is that one and Rory finishes outside the top 15 and he does propel the number one in the world, I will truly believe in the Mandela effect. And I woke up in a parallel universe because it would be some insane stuff.
And I can't believe that he keeps getting disrespected the way he does.
He's so good though.
He was 28-1 4 weeks ago whenever I bet him at Harbortown. That's whenever your dad and I both bet him the same week. I'm like, 28-1 on Webb? Are you kidding me? The value is just insane. Speaking of pretty good value, Gary Woodland is 45-1. I already said I love him this week.
That played is well really last good value week. For Woodland.
I mean, 45-1, that is long odds. And then a guy who has great course history. And honestly, he played so bad last week that I think sometimes when a guy plays horribly and then goes to a course that he likes, I know it was same course last week. Follow my train of thought here. When you play so bad, sometimes you just scrap your thoughts and go back to the basics, and it helps you to play good golf. Justin Rose played so bad last week that honestly he shouldn't even be allowed to play this week. But since he is allowed to play, I think he's going to go back to the basics, forget about, you know, whatever he was trying to do in his game. He was playing well after the restart early, finished third and 14th the first two events, couple of missed cuts in a row, scrap whatever you were doing, get back to business. Justin Rose at 50-1, I just like the value. I look for value. I've got a guy, former number one, who can win golf tournaments. So that'll be my sixth this week is Justin Rose at 50-1.
Well, you know the reason he played so bad last week is because I picked him in our one and done pool.
That's exactly the reason.
Exactly. So now the week after, he's guaranteed to at least play well, but, you know, worst case scenario.
Which brings me to our one and done pool. I'll be using Justin Rose on both fronts. There are guys I like a lot more than Justin Rose this week, but a lot of the guys I like a lot more, I kind of want to save. I kind of want to save because we're going to be using two guys at all the majors, the WGCs, the playoff events. So I'm going to save some guys that I like more for later in the season. I don't think Rose is missing a cut in back-to-back weeks on a course that he absolutely loves. So I'm running Rose out in both one-and-done pools, a guy who shot 80 the last time we saw him play golf, and I'm taking some big chances on Justin Rose.
Big chances, yeah. We had mentioned how he had kind of started to get everything to come back once he switched from his Hamna equipment and back to TaylorMade and using essentially whatever he wants. So he's able to get it back there. I picked him in our one-and-done pool last week. Missed the cut, so that's kind of the kiss of death for him. But along those same lines, I will run out two different guys. So like I mentioned, Schauffele will be my pick in our big one-and-done pool. I just, it's because I'm in the same situation as you, Colby, where it's there's such a loaded field, but yeah, we have so many big tournaments left. It's like you don't want to waste someone really good. And, you know, you want to make sure that you save your Rorys and your Koepkas. And we had a buddy who used Koepka a few years ago at like the Bay Hill where he missed the cut.
Oh,
and,
God. Shout out, Matt.
Yeah, and we gave him hell for pretty much the rest of the year. So you gotta make, you know,
moron.
Use your, and obviously we're at least in the big pool, I'm doing absolutely horrible. So it's not like I'm the prophet here by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, try to save your good guys when you can. But Schauffele's just been playing so well. I think I'm gonna run him out, and I'm kind of like you with Brooks. I just have a feeling that Schauffele's gonna have a good week. And for our podcast one and done pool, I had used him at Riviera earlier in the year in our big one and done pool when I was debating between him and Adam Scott. So I was debating on the win.
Polygamous.
Yeah, exactly. But who I'm gonna go with? I'm going with Cantlay. Cantlay.
I already had it typed.
He was.
As soon as you said you almost picked him at Riviera, I was like, okay, Cantlay's a Riviera guy. He's picking Cantlay. I already had it typed in the computer, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's played twice since the return, 11th of the Traveler, 7th last week here, and the course history is really good as well. He obviously won last year, fourth the year before. Worst finish is 35th. Playing so well, such a great player. I'm going to run him out in our pool, and if he ends up winning, I'm going to be mad at myself that I burned him in our big one and done pool too soon.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's a good pick. I thought about using Cantlay this week in our podcast one and done. I think I've already used him in the big. I did. I used him last week for that seventh place at the work day because I needed some cash. I was a little low down on the list, yeah. So I needed to use a player. But I really like Cantlay this week. I think he's got a good chance to contend and win the golf tournament. You got any other DraftKings values before we call it a day?
Yeah, I got a couple values here. Yeah, so I'll just, since it's such a loaded field, I'm just going to go to guys that are below 8,000. And just to start off for some value, I'll go up higher and I'll take out some guys who I would kind of stay away from. We talk about how he's just the machine, the robot, and he's going to turn it around eventually. But I'm staying away from Sun JM this week. It's just
he's just off.
I don't know what it is. He's made the cut both times. He made the cut last week here and then last year, but his best finish at this course is 57th. And then he finished 10th at the first tournament back, Colonial, but after that, missed the cut, and then his best finish is a 53rd in four events. So, you know, when you're looking around 82 is such a stacked field, I'm going to lean towards some other guys there. So I would add him to my fade list. A couple guys we've had on our fade list since the break have played really well, so it might be another kiss of death situation. But he's a guy who I was looking at earlier, and I said, and for that price and for how good he was earlier in the year, I'm going to stay away from him. And another guy who's had good course history here that I'm going to stay away from, who I think a lot of people may pick, is Mark Leishman. He missed the cut last week here at the tournament. His course history here is essentially phenomenal. Two top fives, 11th, 15th within the last 5 years. But since the return, he has not finished better than 58th. Has played three events. Two of them were missed cuts. Finished 58th at the Travelers Championship. So that's just a guy that I just don't think is in form. And for how stacked of a field it is, kind of like we mentioned, we both stayed away from the guys in the 7,000 range just because we were kind of able to go top heavy and find some guys that we like cheaper than that. But some other guys who are a little bit cheaper who I like, a lot of people are talking about him. I like Ian Poulter this week. I think he finished 5th here last week, has been playing well really since the break has started, and I think he'll keep that going as well at 7,600. I like Poulter. A guy I like at 7,500 is Billy Horschel. He finished, T7 last week. He did not miss two cuts before that, but getting here and has played fairly well in this course, I want to pull up his exact course history.
Horschel's total hit or miss. He finished 9th here last year, missed the cut the two previous years. played it three other times, couple top 15s, a 41st. Horschel's very much a hit or miss guy.
So since his first time here, he finished 41st. Since then, 2014, finished 15th. 2015, finished 11th. Two missed cuts, 2017, 2018. Finished 9th here last year at the Memorial. Finished 7th last week at the Workday Charity Open, the technical name for it. So for someone kind of, if you're looking around, build your lineup around there, I kind of like him around the 7,000 mark. A guy who's been playing really well, I'm not sure if I would roster him, lay any coin, is Kevin Streelman. He's finished second at the Travelers. Finished 7th last week. And, you know, just for someone at that value who's had back-to-back top sevens, I mean, it's really hard to find that. And 1 second, I'm trying to find his exact course history here. And he's had really good history here. I knew it exactly. I just couldn't remember off the top of my head. Finished 4th here last year, finished 44th 2018, but before that finished 13th, 8th, and then 18th. And then going back to 2011, he also finished 7th there as well. So for a guy who's on form and has a little bit of course history here, I'll roll him out as well. And just keep scrolling down here. A guy he hasn't missed the cut since the return. Adam Hadwin. He was getting a lot of news here lately because of the ruling that he got at RBC when he was mic'd up and got the penalty. So a lot of people are talking about that.
Opening round 66 last week for Hadwin, only one off Morikawa's lead through 18 holes, and then he kind of faded. Ended up in 35th last week.
Yeah, it went 73, 76, and kind of like what you're going with Koepka, finished with a 68. So might have kind of started to get some things together. For a guy who hasn't missed the cut yet at that value, I really like that. And let me see here, scroll down. Another guy who I like at 7,000 mark is, there's actually two guys at 7,000 I like. One is your close personal friend, Matt Wallace.
Shout out Matt Wallace.
Who has made the cut in back-to-back events. We've mentioned how many ever, who last year I thought he was the most underrated player in the world. I just thought he was phenomenal and had everything clicking. No one was just appreciating him. Went through a little bit of a slump. Two made cuts in a row. I think he's kind of getting it back. And another guy who I like at 7,000 is Seb Straka. Finished last 2 weeks.
Playing good golf, yeah.
Finished T14 last week at the same course. And then the week before, Rocket Mortgage, finished 8th. So, T8. So, you know, for 7,000 at that value, I'm gonna lean on that for someone who's been in form. And then we can go cheap, even down to some of the cheaper guys. We've already mentioned some of the guys that were playing. Taylor Gooch, Tyler Duncan, Stuart Sink. And going a little bit down, another guy at 6,600 who I would... would feel comfortable rolling out is Troy Merritt. Last 2 weeks, he finished T22 at this course last week, and then at the Rocket Mortgage, finished T8, and then pull his exact course history up.
You've always got old man Stricker down there too.
You do have Stricker down there, and
6,000.
Merritt at this course finished 22nd last week. Didn't have very good. He's only played it a total of 5 times, including last week. But in 2019, he did finish 17th. Which was his best finish at this course. So another guy, if you're looking for that cheap value, you go there. And then what is Stricker's price on draft?
Stricker is 6,000, bottom of the barrel.
Exactly.
56th last week. He's played here 8 times since 2009. He has a win, another top 10 to his credit, and has not missed a cut in those 8 tries.
And that's someone who might get you the weekend. You know, we look at it here. Obviously, he had went through a stretch where he's playing a lot on the Champions Tour, and since the return, he's missed cut. But he missed 2 cuts when he first came back, but since then he has made both cuts at Rocket Mortgage and last week at the Workday, but his best finish is a 56. But if you are trying to go top heavy, like you feel like you can do with some of these guys, 6,000 might be a guy you throw out there. But if we were debating between just $100, I like your Stuart Sink a decent amount more than I would Stricker.
Yeah, I think that they've both got a good chance to make the cut. I think Sink has a better chance to top 25 based on the way he played last week.
I would agree.
And the way he's kind of played
Stricker's
all year.
One of those guys, you put him in there and you're really just hoping for a top 30 finish at best, in all honesty. I mean, obviously he could go out there and, you know, any of these guys could technically win the tournament, but he's not someone like these, like Rahm or Koepka, anything, or Rory, anyone like that who you expect to contend. And that there's a reason he's 6,000 on draft.
Yes, no doubt about it. This is going to be a phenomenal tournament. 8-10 field strength, best for a regular season event ever. How will they set up Muirfield Village? How will it differ from last week? How will Tiger play? So many questions. I feel like we're just killing time between now and when this thing gets underway on Thursday. I cannot wait. Hopefully the coverage is good. Hopefully the coverage is not interrupted. We can see as many golf shots as possible. If ever there were a week to show us as many golf shots as possible, it's this week.
Yeah, I really would prefer to not come on a recap show on Monday and talk more about how bad the coverage was than about the golf. Exactly. That is the number one thing that we don't want. And, you know, best case scenario, hopefully we're talking on Monday about a Tiger win. That would be number 83, which would be monumental. We might have a huge party and have a huge celebration if that happens.
Yeah, I probably would not be able to get through that recap show without getting a little emotional.
No, it wouldn't. Yeah, there'd be some tears shed there for sure. And hopefully that's best case scenario. But at the end of the day, this is just going to be a great tournament. And kind of like I mentioned earlier in the show, I just hope that we get a really good finish at the end with a lot of guys jam-packed. I don't want one of these really good players to go out and get a
win by seven. Yeah,
exactly. Like DeChambeau could, or Rory could, or even your Koepka pick who hadn't been playing well. He has the talent to go out there and do that. That's just when you have these good guys. Or we might be coming back on Monday talking about Webb being number one in the world, which would probably be the most surprising thing to me that has happened during all of this.
Yeah, you know? No doubt about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Reminder, call Bushwood, 405-224-1250. Get in that tournament next Friday night. Four-man team scramble, whatever you want to do. We're doing couples. My wife and I pairing up with my brother-in-law and my sister will be down there playing some golf. If you just want to make a tee time and go play the course, do it. 405-224-1250. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Enjoy the Memorial. We're back Monday with more 73rd Hole.